Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network. For the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews, press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. In a world where action movies are constantly exploding at the box office, our heroes take on the monumental task of dissecting and analyzing all aspects of action movies to truly understand what it takes to make a great action film. Ben Bateman, Andrew Guy, in a Popcorn Talk Network exclusive, this is Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom! What's up, guys? How's it going? Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy on Popcorn Talk, the online movie network dedicated to talking movies and all things movie-related. I'm Ben Bateman, your host, joined today by my trusted co-host, Andrew Guy.
What's up, everybody? Glad to be here. You will be taken by the end of this episode. You will be taken.
And we have a very special guest today.
Hello, it's Kathy Kelly. That was, I would say, a 6 out of 10 on Liam Neeson's scale.
I gotta warm up.
We warm into our impressions.
By the end of the episode, it's going to be perfect.
I think you actually have to get more cold to get into
more,
character.
More deadly.
By the end of the episode, all of our impressions will just sound like Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
That's what usually happens. That's like
either that or Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yes, that's the MO of the show. So, guys, this is Action Movie Anatomy. We talk action movies on this show. We talk action movies made 1981 or later that apply four basic rules. Number one, the hero always plays by their own rules. Rule number two, the hero and the villain are always the smartest people or dinosaurs or aliens or sometimes in the room.
Yeah,
exactly. Rule number three, the movie is driven by a police, military, or political figure. And rule number four, the movie contains a minimum of one explosion. I think it should be like a minimum of 10. Because
yeah,
I feel like
one is like, that's in like rom-coms, there's one.
Yeah, that's like, have you driven a car in your life? That's like what that feels like.
There weren't 10 in this movie.
There's like 10 explosions in this movie. If you really thought hard, are there not?
No.
I don't think there's 10.
In that one scene where just like...
Maybe head exploding moments.
Construction yard. Yeah.
Not those actual count. Explosions.
Those count.
We could say metaphorical explosions.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, this is Taken, the Liam Neeson action nuts and bolts old school movie made in 2008.
Feels like 1904.
It feels like one of those movies from like 1988, but that was like made in 2008.
Yeah, it feels like a mid-80s, like mid-90s
action movie. Yeah, which is rare that they're so successful. But this movie was very successful. So we are going to show the trailer right now for you guys, and we'll kind of chatter over it.
I don't know who you are.
Yeah, exactly. I remember like when the trailer for this movie came out, and like I almost feel, and I still actually feel that the trailer is better than the movie.
Really?
Yeah, it's because basically the movie is that
the
speech.
Trailer.
Yeah, it's the speech that he gives. That's like the whole movie
to me.
It's
so iconic, though. Like, that's something that I feel like people who have seen the movie once are still quoting that line.
Absolutely.
It is.
It's literally the equivalent of the speech that Bill Pullman gives in Independence Day, which we talked about last week.
Yeah.
It's just the one thing about the movie everyone knows.
Right.
Even if you've seen it, whether you haven't or not, it's like... It is the best part of the movie.
Ingrained in your memory.
Yes.
And it's
for
even,
life.
It's even funnier, too, because in the trailer, there's, like, that really, like, melancholy piano music that plays behind it. And when I think about that scene in the movie, in my mind, that's what's happening, but it's actually not in the movie. It's just in the trailer.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hate that.
Do you?
I just hate that those moments in trailers are like, this is so awesome. And then it happens in the movie. It's like, it's like they go like right past it.
Yeah.
It's not
yeah.
dramatic at all.
The power of editing.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. Well, and even like we were talking, we were watching the movie. We're like, I wish he gave the speech just a little slower.
A little slower. Totally.
What?
Just a hair slower.
Yeah, just like a little.
So
it'd be a little more dramatic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like, extremely.
The first
dramatic.
Like 3/4 of it could be a little slower.
I mean, you see the whole movie in this trailer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like every bit of it. In fact, all the parts
except the last 10 minutes.
But like all the parts of the movie that are like not that exciting are the parts that you just don't see in the trailer, right?
Yeah.
Everything relevant
mm-hmm.
is shown in the trailer. But anyway.
You don't get to see the pop concert in the trailer.
That's my favorite.
Oh yeah,
part.
That's true.
With Shira.
Yeah, with Shira. What pop star do we think Shira is supposed to like be? Is that like supposed to be?
She's kind of a bitch. Just saying.
Yeah, I mean, is she supposed
to... I think a lot of them are.
Yeah.
To be at that level of success.
Is she
know?
Just supposed
to... where people
to
are trying to shank you in the alley behind your concert.
The conveniently placed...
Yeah, just kind of, like, standing there with a knife.
Yeah, right.
Why do you have a gun?
I don't know, because he's crazy, man.
Well, yeah, clearly.
He didn't think this operation through.
Maybe he didn't actually want to kill her. Maybe he just wanted to, like, slice her up. Or maybe
like,
he wanted
his name into
he
her.
Wanted to take her.
Maybe.
Yep.
Or maybe, like, Liam actually hired the guy.
Yeah, I'm still relevant.
Like in Kingpin.
That was D'Onofrio.
That was D'Onofrio. You were going with the D'Onofrio voice. Did you watch Daredevil, the Netflix series?
I watched the first maybe 5 episodes, yeah. And then I just had other series that I felt took precedence.
So you are familiar with the D'Onofrio Vanessa
with Kingpin's voice.
Yep.
Okay, good.
You gotta stay away
from that. We do a lot of that one, yeah. We should probably do the Bane voice more often on this show.
We should.
Yeah, we don't do a lot of the Bane. All right, so guys, that's the trailer for Taken.
I don't agree with you. I don't think that the trailer's better than the movie.
Okay, it's at least as good, but that's just it's one man's opinion. It's one man's opinion. So
and yours is wrong. Okay. Just joking.
Fair enough. Let's get into bold statements and fist pump moments. Yeah. So do you guys have your thesis statements prepared?
You go first.
I'm going first? Yeah. Okay, sure.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to stop you for a second and remind the audience just because it's episode. Sometimes we get new viewers. I don't know. But they might know what we're doing here. So, guys.
Hey, it's okay.
This is our bold statement moment in the show. And what we do here is we come up with one idea that sort of is the underlying theme for our opinion of the movie. It shouldn't be like I feel this way. It should be it is this way. And basically, if you have your own, you should share it with us in the comments, as you guys so often do. So please comment and let us know what you think. You can follow me on Twitter if you want to tweet at me about this. I am Ben Baton Media.
At Andrew Guy on Twitter, GHAI.
At Catherine Kelly.
So just in case you guys want to share your ideas with us, that's where to share them. So let's get straight into it. Andrew, bold statement. What do you got?
All right. So this is like, for this movie, this is like a Matt Damon Good Will Hunting equation right here for action movies.
Oh, wow.
This movie is the perfect action movie equation. They figured out how to do it just right. All of it. Just enough action. You care about the characters just enough. There's not a lot of bullshit in it.
Sure.
You know, they cut to action to scene. That's all, yeah, very quick.
Yeah.
They figured it out, and by the reception critically and with the box office, it's pretty evident that somehow this movie that no one thought was going to be good, Liam Neeson doing an action movie, even he didn't think it was going to be,
yeah,
good. He was like, whatever, I'll go travel in Paris and France,
so
I'll have
shocked.
Fun.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and maybe I can like reinvent myself as an action movie star.
At age 54.
At age,
right?
54, so awesome. Maybe. Somehow Luc Besson Luc Besson.
Yeah, you got that.
Wrote this perfect action movie equation. Whatever it is, I don't know, but they figured it out.
Yeah, he was like, let's look at everything that Stallone and De Niro did, and,
right,
and Schwarzenegger in the '80s, and just take that. And
yeah, then, I mean, this is a mid-90s, like we said in the beginning. This is like a mid-90s, late-80s action movie that came out 20 years later.
Yeah, and it worked.
Or 10 years, yeah.
Yeah, one of the only ones. Yeah. I like that. What do you got?
Thank you.
This is a movie that is so absolutely ridiculous on paper, but makes so much sense on the screen. Like, when you're, yeah, watching it, you're so invested in it. And if you actually were to write down some of the quotes or the things that happened, it's so...
Oh, yeah.
Like, what? You just have what moments? Like, oh, yeah, the second room that he walks into, he sees his daughter's jacket.
There are
just so many, like, happenstance moments. Oh, that the second girl that comes out, like, he happens to walk into the auction, and she's the second girl that comes out. Like,
right. It's perfect.
There are so many moments that are perfect timing that would never happen in real life, but you're so invested in these characters by the end of the movie that... Yeah.
That's absolutely true.
It's so true. I went through and I was like trying to figure out my favorite quote, and I was like, oh, the speech, right? But then I went and looked at all these other quotes from the movie.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, they're all so bad.
They're
so
kind
good.
Of like a Mad Libs at one point. I feel like I wrote down some other quotes, but it's just a fill in the blank.
Oh, totally. Like, what word should we put here?
There's like, or like some of the, we're like, we were watching it, and you're like, God, that's so bad. When you like, yeah, like some of those lines, like, so you're gonna, I'm gonna.
Oh,
like,
yeah, no, I got it right here. It's the, no, here, you give yours, and I'm going to pull up the line. I wrote
it down
a minute ago.
What girl would say, Amanda's character, what girl would say, oh, yeah, and we're home alone. We have the place to ourselves.
Right. Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah, like right in front of this random guy that you never met that some reason got out of the cab,
yeah,
that he took with you.
Or,
yeah,
after all of this, Kim going through things that I can't even imagine, being happy and cheerful a couple days later, going,
oh, yeah,
to meet a pop star. Like, nothing.
No PTSD.
Well, yeah, the best part about that is when they get back to the airport, like, they're like, oh, yeah, my friend's dead, but I'm happy to see my family.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't ever acknowledge her.
Where's your friend? She's dead in Europe, but I'm safe. This is great.
Or Liam
Neeson
saying, I really want to take you to the airport. That's my only stipulation for you being able to go on the trip. But then the mom is also there, so why did he even take her to the airport?
Right.
Famke Janssen's a bitch.
Yeah.
That's why she's so horrible in this movie.
What?
She's evil.
Don't let Marissa
know
that.
No,
that's
no, I don't think that she's bad in the
actress.
Movie. I think that she's evil in the movie.
She's like an evil
she's
person.
She's like a very,
yeah,
oblivious mother.
So then what happens to her in Taken 2?
Right.
We'll find
she's
out.
Like the nicest
you'll have to
right,
you'll
right,
have
here
to
we go.
So it's for Taken 2.
You either give me what I want I can't even say it.
What
either,
is the other?
Either give me what I need, or the switch will stay on until they turn off power for lack of payment on the bill.
I love that one. What is the other Liam Neeson movie that he's in with January Jones?
Oh yeah,
it's a very similar.
It's the imposter. No, it's like where he loses his. She loses her memory. It's not Nonstop. It's called.
Run
it,
All Night? Run
it
all
no, it was like one? It was like the next year. It was like 2009 or something like that. I saw it on an airplane.
Like that.
It's called like Replaced or like. Anyway, I'm gonna give my you guys.
Yeah, you
look
get
that
yours.
Up.
I'll look it up.
All right, so this movie is the most basic acting exercise actualized in a film, and I say that because every acting class I ever took when I was younger, I went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts for a year, like. All of the things in acting, like basic stuff, it's make a choice and have an objective.
Right.
That's the whole thing. The stronger choice you make, the stronger objective you have in a scene, if you're even in the class, is Unknown is the name of the movie. Our wonderful producer.
I think I saw that on an airplane as well. Yeah.
So every choice that you make, they're like, the stronger the choice, the stronger the objective, the better your performance is going to be. So they're like, okay, I got an idea. Let's take a great Oscar-worthy actor, mm-hmm. let's put him in essentially a straight-to-video action movie, and let's give him one objective the entire movie. All he has to care about is getting his daughter back. Mm-hmm. Everything else that he does, it doesn't matter what he's saying, doesn't matter the dialogue, he doesn't even have to read the script. Every scene, just be like, Liam Neeson, if you don't get your daughter back, she's gonna die. That's what you have to do in this movie.
Right.
And that's the whole movie. So it's the ultimate action exercise actualized in a film. That was what I, when I thought about it, that was what I came up with.
Yeah, I mean, I get it.
Yeah.
It's just incredibly basic, the whole thing.
Yeah.
So it's just like objective and task or tactic.
And it never changes.
Nope.
It's not like, oh, you're the head of the League of Shadows and you have to train Bruce Wayne, but you're actually Ra's al Ghul.
Right.
It's not like you're like, oh, you know, you're like the father
of a
nobleman.
There's no layers.
And it's the Crusades.
Movie.
It's like, nope, you're just a guy, you're Brian Mills, and you have to get your daughter back. That's
this
isn't
an onion.
Yeah.
There's no layers.
There's no layers. It's no complexity. So yeah.
Ducard.
I am Dukat. All right, so let's get into star profiles. Unless you guys had any other awesome Liam Neeson quotes you wanted to share, we can
say
that.
We'll get there.
All of them.
Okay, we just, like, the whole movie.
Yeah.
Lack of payment on the bill. That's a
lack
good line.
Lack of payment on the bill. What about our fist pump, huh?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I should have bolded it. Yeah, you guys want to go fist pump? Should we do it?
Yeah.
All right, what do you got?
I'm not going first, though. I went first last time.
My fist pump moment is actually a quote. It is the iconic quote is what I do have are a very particular set of skills.
Yeah.
Skills I have acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. I will look for you. I will find you. And I will kill you.
And I will kill you. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's pretty amazing. I mean, like, in terms of, like, what people will remember this movie for, you know, 20 years from now. Mm-hmm. If you saw this movie once in theaters and you have kids and they're like, what? And you're like, oh, this movie Taken. I saw this when I was a kid. And he's got this great speech. That's all you're going to remember.
Mm-hmm.
So it totally does stand out. I agree with you. My fist bump moment's actually, and this is, like, a little, like, screwed up to say, I feel like. But I just remember thinking this in theaters. Because it's so, like, weird in an action movie. It's when he's interrogating the French police officer, and he shoots his wife in the arm.
Oh, it's great.
That's such a ridiculous moment, though, because you're supposed to be this good guy, and you're shooting a civilian that's being really nice to you.
Yeah, but his thing is, like, and this is why I think it's so interesting, and you'd be much more likely to see it in the movie now, but at the time, it was shocking, because it was like, he is this good guy, but he wants his daughter back so much, he doesn't care.
Stop it, nothing.
Right.
He's like, collateral damage non-stop. Doesn't matter to me. Like, exactly, nonstop. Stop, right? Like, he doesn't care, and he just shoots her. Now, in my memory, I remember him shooting her in the stomach, which is way more nefarious.
Oh, yeah, because she's pregnant, so that would be horrible.
Right, yeah. So that didn't happen, actually. Yeah. But
he says it's just a flesh wound, too, but it looks like it went through.
Right. So that was, because it's an intense moment. Like, it's one of those, anytime you have that, like, kind of startled, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of a fist pump a little bit.
Yeah, I love what he says about how it's, like, the last thing that she'll see before I orphan her children is the bullet that I put between her eyes. It's holy crap, man.
Yeah, he's
calm
pretty,
down. Just calm down.
Pretty awesome.
My fist pump moment is when he finds Peter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and outside the cabin, he gets in and he starts hitting him in the stomach. He's like, the next one of these will drive your rib into your lungs. it's the first time you really see him, like, go full action mode.
Go full crazy.
Like, you see him prevent earlier, because that's what he is. He's a preventer.
Yeah.
You see him do that in the hallway at the rock concert.
Yeah.
But this is the first time you're like, oh, Liam Neeson's a badass.
Yeah, you're the real deal, man.
Yeah.
Peter being, like, a real-life Frogger. Just like, yeah.
Burger.
Damn.
and then he had a game over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Semi truck. Get three more lives.
Does not
two
go
more
well.
Lives.
No, no more lives. No, man.
That was a good joke. Do you do improv?
I don't. Yeah, I do.
You do.
Yes, and.
Oh, my God. I feel like I'm alone on an island over here. You guys are in a scene right
we're
now.
We're having fun over here, man.
Let's get into star profiles, guys. I want to talk about where Liam Neeson was in his career when he made this movie. This is actually one of, like, the most interesting star profiles, because normally you look at these guys and, like, you know, with Schwarzenegger, it was funny that he had done two comedies before Terminator 2 or things like that. But, like, Liam Neeson, this career turn is one of the most unique. We were talking about this. I can't think of a lot of people that have had career turns that quite as drastic as this.
Right.
Especially so late in their career.
Like, the one that came to my mind was Mickey Rourke.
Yeah.
Because, like, The Wrestler and then Iron Man and all that. Like, he had pretty much fallen off, and then he started to come back.
And that was almost, like, not by his own decision. Yeah, that was kind of like, he was able to get a role because somebody was nice enough to offer
right,
it
like,
to him.
That was The Wrestler. It
yeah.
Was like, and he was perfect in that.
Amazing,
he was cast perfectly, and that's kind of this thing with Liam.
I don't think anybody thought he was perfect. I think it was
well, no, I was going to say, is like, they put him in Batman Begins, and you're like, and then you see it, and you're like, okay, wow, he's really good in
this. Yeah.
Kingdom of Heaven,
That movie's not very good.
I didn't see Seraphim Falls, either of you guys?
No, because I was, clearly, because I thought it was the one with Thomas Hayden Church, and it's not at all.
You just really like Thomas Hayden Church.
I do, yeah. Well, I just like Sideways. That movie's great.
Oh, it's one of the best.
If we could do Sideways on this show, we can't.
It's not an action.
No, we can't. There's a scene
where...
there
is some action in it.
That guy runs naked through the street. That's pretty action-packed.
We could do Boogie Nights, then, in that sense. Because there's one action scene.
If there's any, like... Two. If, like, we could get enough votes from our fans that were like, just do Boogie Nights...
Oh, we would do it in a heartbeat.
I would just skip the parameters for one episode, because it's, like, my favorite movie.
Look,
almost.
If we get enough votes for us to do Boogie Nights, Ben and I will recreate the song that John C. Reilly and Mark Wahlberg do.
We'd have to... If we could get, like...
Seven. At least four.
Seven votes.
Yeah, at least seven
you
votes.
Give us seven votes, we'll do it.
Six votes. Six
okay,
votes.
Okay, guys. One. We just...
We got one. We need 6-4. That's it.
So Kingdom of Heaven 04, Batman Begins 05, and Seraphim Falls. Seraphim Falls is like, I think it's like some revenge driven Western with him and Pierce Brosnan. So I remember when the trailer for this movie came out, and we live sort of in an era now where this is very common, but in 2008 this was a newer thing. You guys know when you load up Facebook, you see your newsfeed, and there'll be like some link that three people have shared,
mm-hmm.
and it'll be like Gawker.com has written like, the new trailer for Liam Neeson's ridiculous action movie is out, and his monologue is awesome.
Right.
Right? And then somebody comments, you're like, oh, I guess I have to watch this. And you click on it, and you're like, oh, man, that speech is so sweet.
Right.
Like, I totally remember, like, just his speech in the trailer kind of went viral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I kept hearing about it from people, like... But it was so weird.
Yeah, people were saying it before the movie even came out.
Yeah,
they're
right.
Like, I will find you and I will kill you.
I'm exactly.
Like, because oh, this was the resurgence of his career.
Yeah, exactly. Because his career was not
no
doing
it wasn't
bad
but this was like, it's a total recreation.
Well, like, so we were talking about this because we're going to do recast later. People who, like, you think about actors who were in the position at some point in their career, in their mid-50s maybe, that Liam Neeson was when he made this, right?
It's very hard.
He hadn't fallen off at all. He was Oscar-worthy. He had been nominated for Schindler's List. By all rights, should have won in 93 for Schindler's List.
Yeah,
he was amazing.
Absolutely.
Right? He had been in all kinds of great movies over the years. Like, most people would say, from a dramatic sense, Liam Neeson was an A-lister in 2008 still. Like, you would still put him in a movie next to any of the top actors in the world and expect he'd hold his own completely.
Right, like, he's the A-lister in the sense of, like, he won't be getting all these roles as the lead.
Yeah.
But if you see him in any great film,
yeah.
a film that's, like, wild-renowned or Oscar-nominated or whatever, it's like, oh, yeah, he's perfect in
it's
it.
It's like Scorsese casts him as there. DiCaprio's father in some movie. You're like, oh, totally, he's going to kill it.
I'm into it.
So he takes that and, like, turns it into this. That's like, what would happen if, like, Richard Gere in the late 90s had made Taken?
Right.
Or, like, something. It's, like, so weird to think about. It doesn't make any sense.
You know, and it's weird because, like, action stars in the 90s are so different than action stars now. As an audience, we've become so accustomed to, like, especially with UFC fighting getting so much more popular.
Yeah.
The stylized martial arts that happens in movies now with, like, Sherlock Holmes and this movie. And it's not the same as in the 90s when you could just give the dude a big gun and he could mow through a room of people.
No, yeah.
Which is why, like, because Richard Gere did do the Jackal in the 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
And it didn't work.
You have to have a very particular set of
skills. Yeah, you have to have that set of skills.
Liam Neeson also had a very particular... stunt double. He's had the same guy for like 12 years prior to this movie.
Right.
So
yeah.
It's kind of like you get the package deal.
Yeah.
You've taken both of us.
So I think that's pretty interesting to think in like 2008. And then he definitely went on a run. I think he made 6 or 7 movies in this style, right?
Yeah.
Run All Night,
Non-stop.
Walk Amongst Tombstones, Nonstop, Unknown, 3 Taken movies. Like, that's 7
the
right
Lego
there.
Movie.
It's so
Okay.
was action packed, man.
I love that movie.
It's very good.
Yeah, it's just crazy. It worked.
It did. Totally
what he did.
Did
completely worked.
I think I'm a little over it now. Like, I wouldn't go see.
I still haven't seen Taken 3.
Nor did I.
Yeah.
But it made the most money.
Did you?
Did it really?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
We'll get to that.
All right, so let's talk Maggie Grace, because her three prior films are, I don't want to say underwhelming, but maybe a little bit less notable than the three that Liam did.
What are you talking about?
We have The Fog in 2005, starring Tom Welling of the Smallville fame. We have Suburban Girl in 07.
She looks so wildly different.
She does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Suburban Girl in 07, which was starring, McDreamy, maybe, or, somebody like that, and someone else. And then the Jane Austen Book Club in 07, which I remember hearing.
Emily Blunt.
And, yeah, yeah, I heard about it. I never saw it. Did you see the Jane Austen Book Club? No?
It was all right.
Okay. So our opinions on those movies sound like they're going to be...
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that her career was not in a place where she was in movies that are marketable to the wide audience that is... Like, as viewers.
Well, you know, she even got a little typecast after this movie, because if you guys recall, she was in that movie with Guy Pearce, The Lockout.
Oh, yeah.
The one where the trailer... So, it's this movie where, there's, some weird thing going on, and there's, a giant floating prison above the world that is, in space.
Genius.
And it's the best... It's this, the baddest criminals, and she's, the daughter, I think, of the president or something like that.
Okay.
And she's working on that prison as, you know...
I missed that one.
Right.
And Guy Pearce... They set the trailer up in this hilarious way. If you played the trailer right now, you'd crack up, because they go... They're like, your daughter's been kidnapped. Dun, dun. It's like, there's only one man who can do it. He's like, steal, but he's a loose cannon. And it's like, and it
who
shows
is it?
It's Guy Pearce.
Oh,
and he gets jacked for it. It's a bad movie.
I love Guy Pearce.
Yeah, he's sweet. But that's, so she's like totally the same thing. She's being saved by a hotshot. It's the exact same thing. So anyway, Maggie Grace.
We have a clip.
Oh, yeah?
Of her talents.
Well, she's a talented runner.
Talented runner. She's even acknowledged it in some interviews that she's done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's acknowledged that she's a little bit embarrassed about, her her talents as a. She just does this thing with her arms.
She's
I don't know why.
She needs to make a sound when that hand goes up.
I wouldn't doubt that.
That's the sound.
That's exactly the sound I was looking for.
Someone has probably made a funnier video.
Oh yeah, with music
this.
And.
Oh, no. This is, I think this is the Liam Neeson speech.
Yeah, no. We don't want this yet. Although, we always
want it all
want,
the
yeah,
time.
Exactly. That can always be playing.
Here we go. Maggie Grace running. Okay.
So just type this in on YouTube, guys. You'll have a lot of fun.
Maggie Grace, I'm sorry. We're not trying to make fun of you. You're very sweet.
We're not trying to make fun of you, but we are.
You've made fun of yourself? Somebody else made fun of you making this video?
Watch the hand. Watch
We're
the hand.
Showing it. Here we go. Arm. My little Kimmy's 17.
This one's my favorite. This is the best one.
Because she gets the turnaround?
Yeah, but hands up in the air, turn around.
It's not that pronounced, but it's I like
it just enough.
I like that she acknowledged it in an interview.
Yeah, exactly. She knows it looks ridiculous.
Oh, this is a good one.
She always hunches over.
I mean, she does play. She does play an awkward teenager well.
Well, it's funny because she's actually older than Amanda, and she plays 2 years younger than her in the film.
Right.
See, that's a real run. That one's okay.
Her arms don't flap as much there.
No, they're down.
She's left.
She's
well,
that's just
after
been taken.
She was taken.
Yeah, she learned a lot.
She learned a lot of her experience overseas. So that's that.
That's that. I hope you guys enjoyed that half as much as I did.
Yes, I'm sure they did. So let's talk production development about how this movie got made. So first and foremost, Europa Corp, right? That's Luc Besson's company, founded in 2000. So this is interesting. It's one of the few companies that integrates a studio and distribution company all together. So he wrote this movie, developed it, as well as the whole Transporter franchise, right? That's all this one company. So they put out tons and tons and tons of releases. They're not outsourcing. They're not making the movie and then selling it to a distribution company. They actually do the whole thing themselves. So every dollar that this movie, the whole franchise made, goes to his company. So Luc Besson is doing quite well.
Oh, yeah, between those two series, he's doing just fine for himself.
Yeah.
Especially because the Transporter has two more installments coming to go into number 5.
Yeah, well, the fourth one's about to come out.
I think
or
so.
Soon-ish.
Or it might be announced. I'm not sure.
And then fifth and sixth are announced.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're just churning them out. I mean, it's crazy when you think about, we're watching this movie, right? And we're thinking to ourselves, we know exactly what we're getting here. We're getting, an entertaining action movie. We're not expecting them to reinvent the wheel. We're not expecting this movie to be nominated for an Oscar.
Right.
So, really, if we can be entertained, they're as long as you guys are entertained, the credibility of this franchise, we don't care.
Right.
As long as it's making money. Mm-hmm. Like, now I'm not putting words in their mouth, but I think to some degree that's got to be the mentality when you're pumping out Transporters 4, 5, and 6. Mm-hmm. If the action is sound and the movie's making money, they'll just keep making them because people will see them.
Yeah, I mean, this is the trailer for this, the marketing for this was kind of like John Wick.
Right.
Where you're like, this movie's not going to be good. I'll probably watch it maybe if I drink enough wine one night or I'm bored enough. Like, sure, I'll just sit around and turn it on.
Right.
But John Wick was awesome. And this movie is also incredible. So I think that's another thing they banked on with marketing. It's the same thing with like Terminator Genesis for me.
Yeah.
It looked like trash. I wasn't expecting anything out of it. And you go in and you watch it. Like, this movie's really damn good.
I wonder if they did the trailer in that way so that it would go viral. Because that was, you know...
The whole reason?
Yeah. Well, social media was just becoming a huge thing at that time when... companies, film companies, I think, were realizing we don't have to spend as much money on marketing and advertising if we can do something that people are going to talk about.
Right. Yeah. It can just go viral on its own. Certainly. Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And you definitely saw, I mean, in terms of... So this movie came out in 2008, right?
Yeah.
And like...
Or it was released January of 2009, but yeah.
Yeah, like the transition that was happening at the time between movies that were actually being promoted with major campaigns and going to theaters, and then movies that were going to Redbox and Video On Demand, that separation was just becoming very clear right then, right? Like people were like less afraid of it. I mean, whereas in like 2004, for instance, if a movie came out and went straight to video, it was like... There's the straight-to-video movies.
Right.
And there's the theater
and
movies.
And here are real movies, and these don't matter.
Yeah, like...
Exactly.
I remember, like, you would go to the video store when there were video stores.
I miss that so much.
Yeah, and you would see, the box on the wall, and it'd be like, if this movie was starring some A-lister, you'd never heard of it, and it was straight-to-video, like, oh, well, that must be a bad movie.
Exactly.
But if you had seen a trailer and it was in theaters, you were like, well, this was probably a decent movie, I just missed it. Whereas I think in 2008, you were just starting to see the transition, and this was one of the big ones where... It looked like a straight-to-video movie, but it had success like a theater movie. Mm-hmm. And I think nowadays we're in a world where it would be very difficult for a movie to be advertised like this and made like this and be successful in theaters because it just looks like a straight-to-video movie.
Absolutely.
I don't think it would get... something like that trailer would have to happen again. I don't think you see it very often,
right?
No,
you don't. Equalizer, John Wick, like these are movies that come into mind with movies that are like this.
Yeah, those were like, I guess they got theatrical release, but when they were in theaters, I'm not going to see that.
No, I'm not going to see it.
I don't necessarily think that it looks like a straight-to-video movie. I think that it just looks like a movie that wouldn't be as successful as it was.
Sure, sure, sure.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. So Luc Besson got very famous in the mid-90s, most notably with Leon the Professional and The Fifth Element. Those are, I think, I would say classics. I don't think
absolutely. Those are two of the greatest. I mean, Leon the Professional is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah,
and
great.
I love The Fifth Element.
Yeah, they're not only like respected, they're cult classics beyond just being classics.
Right. If you're our age and you haven't seen one of those two movies, something's wrong.
Yeah, those are great movies.
Yeah.
I mean, Gary Oldman's just the ultimate badass.
Yeah, and he's in both of them being the ultimate badass.
Yeah, he's great. So, so a few years later, Besson obviously starts the company and then starts cranking these movies out. So it was directed by Pierre Morel, right?
Yeah, and he brought him on because he had this demeanor on set that they wanted Liam to have in the movie.
Right.
He's very lackadaisical, cool-headed, like very calm.
Yeah.
And he operates cameras himself because he was a cinematographer.
Right.
And they liked that. They liked that energy on stage that like helped feed off of Liam Neeson.
No, he was very cool in the behind-the-scenes video that I watched.
So Ben, yesterday, I'm over at Ben's house. We're doing prep, and like I'm sitting there across from him at the table, and I'm hearing this interview. You hear Liam Neeson talk about the film, and then you hear like this guy just ranting in French for like 5 minutes at a time. And I'm assuming there's subtitles on.
I'm interested.
Time, right?
I'm focused.
He's like
on
engaged.
It.
I'm like, how's that going over there? He's like, it's good. It's good. It's in French, but it's good. And I'm like, okay, whatever. So then like 5 minutes later, you still watch it. I go around, and the subtitles are in Spanish, which Ben also doesn't speak Spanish at all. So basically,
I got a few words.
Hola.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Bienvenidos, no?
But he was captivating. I mean, probably for the same reason that Besson liked him, you know? I was entertained.
You know what's interesting about Besson is that his parents were dive instructors when
he
was growing up. So he had, like, a very cool childhood of, like, swimming a lot and diving a lot in the ocean. And when he was young... he had this moment of swimming with a very friendly dolphin. And he was like, I'm going to be a marine biologist. That's what I'm going to do with my life.
Okay.
This is what I want to do. And when he was 17, he had like this horrible diving accident to where he can never go scuba diving ever again. And
he had
to completely change his career and exactly what he wanted to do with life.
Wow.
Like he had no idea. And I'm It's crazy how the same things always happen for a reason, because Fifth Element would have never happened, and neither would Leon the Professional.
And that experience probably, he's taken it into some of the movies that he's done.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I thought that was cool. I read about that this morning, and I was like, interesting. Because we see that about, what was the other guy we were talking about, like, several weeks ago that was a doctor?
Cameron? You're talking about George Miller.
Yeah, George Miller.
Mad Max.
He was like a surgeon.
Yeah.
He's like, I want to make movies.
Yeah, and he took that money and he made the first Mad Max.
Yeah.
Crazy. A lot of these guys have crazy. I mean, James Cameron drove a truck.
Yeah.
He graduated and drove a truck before making Terminator.
Like, I'm not going to do this.
So this was, so Pierre Morel, what was the first one he did? Like Assault on Precinct?
District B-13, which was like this huge cult success that introduced parkour style martial arts.
That's what it was. Yeah. I remember now. Yeah. That movie got a lot of press a few years before Taken.
Mm-hmm.
And it was for that reason.
Yeah, it was massive.
What year was Casino Royale? 06?
2006, it sounds right. Yeah.
Right around the same time. And it has that great parkour sequence at the beginning.
Yeah.
I remember
so awesome.
Parkour was a buzzword. And I do remember this movie now.
Parkour.
Yeah. People were really into it, you know? And YouTube was blowing up at the time, so there was all kinds of crazy videos.
I'm glad they changed it from freestyle walking to parkour.
To extreme walking.
Yeah. Just like, that just doesn't sound cool.
Should have just called it extreme walking. Yeah.
Power walking.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think that's its own.
That's actually, it's, you just get
power
walking
is its own
ground.
Breed, isn't it? Yeah. Isn't power walking?
Yeah.
Like you have the weights?
Yeah.
Have you guys ever done one of those power walks, the weights?
You have to keep one foot on the ground at all times. That's the rule.
Is it?
Yeah. Or else it's running.
Okay.
I'm a seasoned power walker.
Clearly.
All right. So, yeah, he makes that. Then he makes Taken in 2008.
Uh-huh.
Did not subsequently make the Taken sequels. Just made this one.
Morel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was a cinematographer before he worked on this. So he has the visuals, he has the vision. And from what I understand, Luc Besson was having a conversation with him over dinner one night where he was basically just like, I want to make this movie where a guy's daughter is kidnapped and, he has to try to get her back. And Morel was like,
it's going to be hard.
Morel was like, I love the idea. I want to do this.
Yeah.
And he fell in love with it. That was it. That was the whole thing. As these things often happen.
That's how Hollywood happens, yeah.
It's just so absurd.
I know. Well, we found out last week while doing prep for Independence Day
right.
that the premise for that movie came in like a press interview when the director, Roland Emmerich, was like, well, you know, if you were coming to Earth and you were aliens, wouldn't you want to make a huge entrance instead of just like hiding as parasites? And he's like, ding. I have an idea for our next movie.
Yeah. Let's go on vacation to Mexico and ride it over a month.
That's awesome.
It was ridiculous.
But and then he made it From Paris with Love in 2010, as well as The Gunman just this last year with
Penn.
With Penn, which I didn't actually see, but I heard he was just yoked.
That's all I heard. Insanely ripped.
Yeah, like veiny, like just jacked out of his mind. But Paris with Love, which...
with Travolta?
Yeah, well, it's relevant for both of us, because we love the Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 so much, which is the other weird Travolta role from, like, the year before, where he's, like, all tatted up and bald.
Yeah.
Did you see Paris with Love?
I did, but I was not in the right mind state.
Did you see From Paris with Love? Nor did I. He's, like, got, like, a rocket launcher, I think, and, like,
yeah,
a sweet overcoat.
I remember that.
Or something, and he's got the goatee again.
Mm-hmm. Sweet goatee.
Yeah, Travolta. Man, I would love to interview Travolta.
That would be so good.
That guy's great. Aside from that, on the production development, you know, you have, I guess, Besson, like, interviewed the Paris police quite a bit for this movie. He became sort of fascinated with the seedy underworld. This is, like, a real thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This movie. This is, I mean, unfortunately, we joke about this, but, like, the human trafficking angle is not just something that was made up to sell the movie.
Right.
No,
like,
Yeah.
A very real concern, yeah. Mm-hmm. I actually interviewed Dolph Lundgren recently on the for Skin Trade, this movie that he just came out with Tony Jaa.
I don't like the name of that movie.
Skin Trade?
It doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, he actually got theatrical, but
yeah.
Looked like it was, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, it was another one of these that
just
looked
like
we're
talking about. And that movie is about the same thing. It's about human trafficking. And I asked him in the interview, there's a lot of movies now that are sort of, this is the antagonist. And is this something you wanted to write about, or were you kind of jumping on it because it's now like a hot point? And he was like, he got a little annoyed that I think I suggested that he took the idea from Taken because I referenced Taken. But he was also like, I'd wanted to write about this for a long time. Like, mm-hmm. He's a very smart guy.
He is very intelligent.
He's great, yeah. And a very family-oriented guy, too.
Yeah, well-spoken. Yeah, he was fun to talk to. But he was like, I came up with this idea a long time ago before Taken. I wanted to write about this. So this is
a real thing. They talk about like these beautiful mansions just outside of Paris that are just there solely for trafficking, human trafficking.
Yeah.
There was a moment I went to Italy when I was really young with my mom, and I was walking around, I think I was like 12 or 13, with one of my friends who was 14 or 15 at the time. And there was a guy that followed us for probably 2 miles walking. And we walked into a store, stayed there for an hour hoping he would leave. Walked out, he was still there, super followed creepy. Us to his hotel, like, because we spoke English. And, wow. I mean, I know that that's not even the slightest comparison to what happens.
Yeah, it's close,
happens,
though.
But,
you know, who knows what would have happened.
Yeah. Yeah. It's scary.
Terrifying. Absolutely.
One thing I liked about Morel's direction in this, and they talk about it, is that the way that they paint Paris is it's dimly lit, it's kind of old. There's no Eiffel Tower shots, you know, it's not like glorified and all that. They show you like the seedy parts of Paris, what it's really like to live there. You know, like this dimly lit, old world place.
Yeah.
And I like that because it really helps with the feel of the whole movie.
Absolutely. The last, I think, piece of production that I sort of want to talk about is the writer, the other writer, because Luc Besson was the primary writer.
But, Kamen?
Yeah, Robert Mark Kamen. So he worked on the same stuff, largely, right? Transporter franchise, Fifth Element. But he also worked on the Karate Kid franchise.
Right.
Which is interesting to point out.
That's fun.
Yeah, exactly. What's so, like, the polar opposite of this?
Yeah.
That's
it
such
is.
A weird thing to have. I mean, we worked on Lethal Weapon 3, so that's kind of
Taps.
In the same...
You know, that was the first movie he ever did.
You know who was in Taps?
I think someone that you're a fan of.
You know, a guy I like to call Tom Cruise, okay?
So his career is interesting. I mean, who would have thought that the guy that wrote all the Karate Kid movies wrote Taken?
Would you argue that the most classic movie that he ever wrote was Karate Kid 1?
As opposed to?
I don't know, any of the other movies we're talking about? Fifth Element? Karate Kid 1, in my opinion.
Yeah, Karate Kid's got to be it. Yeah, I mean, like,
even
my nephews and nieces know Wax On, Wax Off. They don't even know what the Fifth Element is.
The scene...
How many kids do you think signed up for karate classes because of that movie?
Awesome.
I did.
Right. Because of Ralph Macchio.
you just want to...
Because of Ralph Macchio and Ken... What the hell's Mr. Miyagi's name, the actor?
Oh, Pat Morita.
Pat Morita, there you go.
Yeah.
It's like Ken, but not.
Yeah.
Ken Jeong. Can remember this name at all. The scene in... I know I'm just off subject here, guys, but I just thought of it. Because we do, you know, fist pump moment.
Yeah.
The fist pump moment for me in Karate Kid is when his ankle is screwed up in the tournament. And he's like, I can't, Mr. Miyagi. And he goes, can't. Right? That's my favorite thing ever. Like, I would... Oh, my God.
My favorite's when they're like, paint the fence. And he's like, well, this is so stupid. He's like, paint the fence. And he, like, blocks him.
Yeah.
He's like, wax on. He blocks him. He's like, oh, my God, I've been learning things this whole time.
What about when Mr. Miyagi just snaps with those...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Do you guys think it's...
That's not easy to do.
Like, I think it's funny that karate in the early 90s was a thing that was, like, really cool and, like, a form of combat. People, like, it was, like, very, like, you know, it was, like, sexy kind of. Whereas, like, nowadays, karate is, like, kind of like a joke in a lot of ways. Like, if we did, like, a video of you and I doing karate...
It'd be sweet.
Like, karate moves, it would be, like, more laughable.
Viral.
Yeah.
Than anything else.
Well, yeah, it's all about, like, judo and hapkido and, like Brazilian martial arts.
Yeah,
and all these
Brazilian
things.
Jiu-jitsu and, like... Yeah, yeah. Anyway, we're way off
UFC,
topic.
Yeah, we are.
Do you guys have any thoughts on your favorite form of martial arts? Or
let's
see Andrew?
Talk about UFC.
Yeah, well, because you're all about like
wrestling, but that's completely different.
Oh, really? Is it?
Yeah.
You're like a pro on wrestling, right? You like know it all.
No, not even like little bit. But well, I pretend like I do
because you do an
I
after
like
show.
It.
Right?
Yeah, I like watching it.
Okay, fair enough.
I used to love wrestling as a kid.
Yeah, it was like
I had the belts and everything.
I'm still a kid and I love it.
Yeah.
All right, so this movie, critical reception and box office. Let's get into that. Andrew,
yes.
Well, we argue frequently about IMDb and like the relevance of the number.
It's crazy because IMDb is such a tough place to get a good score, but then lately these movies that we've been doing have scores beyond that I'd ever expect.
Okay, I want to ask our audience something, because maybe you guys know this and I don't. I always assumed that IMDb was, like, those ratings were open to anyone who wanted to rate a movie. So,
I believe it is, if you have an account.
That's how it is with almost, like, Metacritic, Rotten Tomatoes, everything.
Mm-hmm.
But Rotten Tomatoes, like, you can separate, like, top credits and audience, right? So you can get a 41% off of a guy's
right,
that are paid
right review.
The
problem with 41% and 85% is those aren't actual ratings.
Right.
That's the percent of
amalgamation,
people.
Amalgamation, right?
Right, it's like, out of 100 people, 41 thought this was a good movie.
It's not like, I gave it a 79, you gave it a 68.
Yeah, and this
right?
is the average, mm-hmm. No, it's just, like, good or bad.
So the numbers are very surprising, because I always, like, when you look at, like, the IMDb top 250 movies of all time...
We always get an argument about this, because I know that list is flawed, but I also think it's very accurate.
I just think, like, certain movies that are, like, amazing movies, mind you. Great movies. Like, The Dark Knight is one of my all-time favorite movies. Is not, like, one of the five greatest movies ever made in American history.
Yeah.
That's, like, a great movie.
It's the seventh.
But like, or like Pulp Fiction's not like the seventh best movie. Like those are, it's like the silly reviews. Like they're very like fanboy reviews. So let's not get into that. But nonetheless, on IMDb, so if you guys know how this works, please let me know, because it would maybe solve the problem. And then Andrew and I could argue about it on the next episode.
Yes, we will argue.
So the audience review on this one is 85%, and the top critics is 41%. Another one of these movies where an action movie is divided heavily. The audience loves it, and the critics don't.
It's perfect. I mean, I think these ratings are perfect for this movie.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, as a top critic, like she said, like this, and as you said, this movie's not a good movie. It's not well written.
Right.
It's, it, there's no good acting other than that. I mean, Liam Neeson's good in it, and the speech is great. But it's not driven by
like
that.
A good movie. I feel like I want a better word than good. Quality?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's definitely a good movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
It's a ridiculous movie.
Yes.
That's what it is.
Would you call it totally ridiculous?
I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah, okay.
Quality's good. I like that.
Yeah, it's not it's not of high dramatic
but
quality.
But then it almost has an 8 on IMDb.
I wonder why that is.
Which is beyond me.
I wonder who's coming up with those ratings.
I wonder.
Yes. Opinions. Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, exactly. Who are we to say? Like,
well, that's, I mean, if you think about it, a 7.9 is very close to an 85%.
Yeah.
So it's
The fans.
My scale, personally, when rating a movie, has more to do. Like, I put 5 as dead average, and 10's like unattainable. Mm-hmm. So if you're 4, you're like significantly below average, and if you're somewhere in the like 6 to 7 range. That's like a decent movie. So
you're like really harsh and critical. So
if you get to 8, like if you're like a 7.9 movie, that's like a great movie. That's like,
but it is. It is a great movie. That's the thing.
Isn't I would watch it. I have probably watched Taken at least 10 times.
Yeah, I've seen it a handful of times. Yeah. Everyone has.
I've seen it more times than many movies.
And we watched it again the other day, and it was just as enjoyable as the first time.
Agreed. Agreed.
And there are some movies that are, you know, critically acclaimed and probably have 9.5 or 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Well, not 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, but a lot on Rotten Tomatoes. And you've watched it once, and you're like, wow, that's a great movie. But you never watched
it
again.
I'm never going to watch that again, right?
A great example is one of my favorite movies of all time, which I've seen more than anyone I know.
Requiem for a Dream. You weirdo. You like
watch
that movie in your sleep.
It's so good. It's like the saddest, most depressing movie ever, but it's so good. But people watch it once, and they're like, I never need to see that again.
Hey, Drew, what are you doing? I'm great, mood, man. Just drinking a cocktail, watching Requiem for a Dream. You want to come hang out? No, I'm good, man.
I don't
want to
come over. Why do you always invite me over when you're watching that?
I don't know why this just popped in my head, but American History X. Like, I love that movie.
That's another one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's an incredible movie, but I don't know that I've seen it twice.
We'll take over the show.
I'm in the same boat.
I've seen that movie at least a dozen times.
I know.
Okay, yeah. Well.
All right. Well, let's get back.
Let's move it along.
I've seen the Lego movie 4 times, so.
Yeah, Lego movie is really good. It's really, really good. That's
awesome.
No, it's good, yeah.
So Neeson actually had said originally that he expected this movie to be straight to video and a little side road for his career, which I think is interesting. He, in terms of reviewing the movie and the reviews that it got, as we saw, this was like, this wasn't like, oh, he can do this too. This is all he's done since he did Taken.
Yeah.
He's in 7 movies. Has he done anything other, like, do we know? Has he done anything other than this? Does he have one credit other than like those 7 action movies we named?
Million Ways to Die in the West.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Which was like a comedy, which was okay.
Ted 2 he's in, I think.
Yeah, he has the cameo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't really count. And then Dark Knight Rises, but he's not really in it.
Ducard, he shows up.
Ducard.
Great movie.
I just love some of his interviews that he did to promote Taken and then promote Taken 2, where he's so calm and collected and he's just such a cool dude, but he'll like, he went on Good Morning America to promote Taken 2 and he just said ass in front of like the entire viewing audience, and like he's unabashedly himself.
Yeah, he's awesome. Oh, he also did Third Person. We talked about that just a second ago. That was the what the hell's his name, the director of Crash, Haggis.
Paul Haggis
movie with like Maria Bello and me.
Yeah,
it was all right. It was, yeah, he's good in it. That's definitely more like old school Liam Neeson, and he'd been in all of this.
Yeah.
Reviewed pretty favorably. What some of the reviews we got here? It's fun for about 15 minutes seeing Neeson do James Bond as Daddy Dangerous, but the surprise wears off quickly. That's Pete Travers from Rolling Stone. Or Kelly Vance.
He's pretty critical. He's pretty hard to win over, I feel. Travers.
Yeah, I didn't copy down the Ebert review.
The Ebert one was also pretty brutal.
Yeah, but Kelly Vance of the East Bay Express said Neeson stars in the sort of part Harrison Ford would have gotten 10 or 15 years ago. I think that's also pretty accurate.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that when we get a recast, because I have my thoughts on that. I want to talk about the box office on this movie, because this is sort of one of the more perplexing parts of it.
When we were doing the research on this, we were both kind of shocked.
Yeah, so the first thing you notice here is that release date, January 30th, 09. So there was a lot of press just this last year for the fact that American Sniper made so much money in January. Mm-hmm. January is usually not when you release a movie that you expect to make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a little late.
It's more like, that's kind of like award season, and even then, you're probably more like February if you really mm-hmm. want the movie to just be like hot.
Right.
But...
oh, I like this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's right behind us here. So, yeah, so Taken, it was made for $25 million, which is, like, pretty standard budget for, like, a straight-to-video style action mm-hmm. movie. But it made $145 domestic, another $81.8 international for a total of $226 million. This movie made $226 million.
Yeah, it almost 10 times its budget.
Like, can you imagine the staff meeting when Luc Besson's like, yeah, we're going to make this Taken movie. Jeff Bridges was originally supposed to be Liam Neeson.
Stop it.
Yeah, yeah.
Would have been epic.
Yeah. He had already been like, he had already signed on. And then,
Tony.
Would have been hilarious. Yeah. And that's actually a great example of exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, Bridges. That's true.
That's the other guy that would have been able to do it in 08. Because same sort of thing. He had always been respected, Oscar worthy, and then just like gets this movie for whatever weird reason. Yeah, yeah.
And Iron Man, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because was Crazy Heart, like, right around the same time?
It was, like, a little bit before that.
Yeah, yeah. So that's pretty interesting. So this movie, it made $226, opened at $24 million against New in Town and The Uninvited. I don't remember either of those movies.
The Uninvited was, like, a mediocre horror movie.
Okay, yep, January.
I'm a big horror movie guy, so...
It was the number one movie of the weekend, beating out Paul Blart Mall Cop by $11 million.
Wait, what?
And Paul Blart was in his third week, made $11
million. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so you love Paul Blart Mall Cop?
No, I'm sorry.
Number two's coming out. What are you guys doing this Friday?
So the most successful Taken film domestically, but the least successful of the series in total gross.
And worldwide, which is mind-blowing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you have, like, Taken 3 made three... Oh, no, Taken 2 was the most successful.
Yeah.
I was wrong. So 376, 325, and 226. Mm-hmm. That's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, and the budgets for these were only like 45 and 48 or something like that. Like, it's not crazy.
Like, you could be a kid in high school, like Luc Besson's kid, mm-hmm. and they're like, what'd your dad do? And it's like, oh, he came up with the Taken franchise. Like, if your dad came up with the Taken franchise, that'd be, like, you wouldn't even have to be Luke. You wouldn't have to be, you just, like...
You'd probably get Taken because your family's so rich.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Held for ransom.
Exactly.
I can tell you I don't have any money. I can tell you I don't have money.
I thought that was pretty interesting. I mean, we don't really need to harp on the numbers too much more.
Yeah, I was shocked at that, though. I was very blown away to see that number two and three were more successful than the first one.
Yeah.
And especially internationally. I would have thought it would be more so domestic.
Mm-hmm. There's, like, this weird thing, right? We saw this with Denzel. So this has been happening as we've been doing the research recently for a lot of these action movies. The international market for this type of movie is much stronger than it is domestically.
Yeah.
Because you see a lot of the style of movie, or even just like the credit that's on the box, the way that it's written, the way that, like, the shadowy figure with a gun or something. Mm-hmm. For whatever weird reason, like, international markets are just about it. So, like, when we looked at, for instance, Denzel Washington's highest grossing movies, like, what was that? Safe House with Ryan Reynolds?
Yeah.
Was one of his highest grossing movies ever.
I've never seen.
The Equalizer was one of his highest grossing movies.
What's his airplane one? Flight.
Flight. That, yeah, no.
Oh, no, really?
Because that's like a dramatic Oscar movie.
Yeah.
Safe House
was number two.
Safe House was his second highest grossing movie ever. Like, that's just the way it is. So if you look at, like,
internationally, he's not successful.
No. So if you throw up the Liam Neeson worldwide box office numbers, Dark Knight Rises makes sense, right? Star Wars Episode I, Chronicles of Narnia, Clash of the Titans, Lego Movie. I mean, nothing that he's ever done that was like...
I mean, this is where we talk about this guy that can be put in any situation, any role.
Yeah.
You look at the list. Wrath of Titans, Love Actually, I love that movie. Yeah. Batman Begins.
Classic.
Like, all the Taken movies.
I love that you love that movie.
Oh, I absolutely love that movie.
Everybody loves Love Actually.
I feel it in my fingers.
I feel it in my toes.
Oh my gosh.
It's the best.
So you look at his career, and it's just, like, it's massive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a $1 billion movie in there. You got two that are over $750,000 or $1 billion.
Yeah.
It's just, his career has been awesome.
On your deathbed, Liam, what's the greatest thing you ever did with your life? I was in a movie that made $1 billion once.
I was a lion. I was Aslan.
That's an iconic role.
Oh, absolutely.
Very, very much so.
Yeah.
So, guys, we normally do ultimate action scene, but because this movie doesn't really feel like it has an ultimate action scene,
mm-hmm.
I think we all kind of agreed that the epic monologue abduction scene, yep. that sort of is the ultimate action scene. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to kind of briefly talk about this scene as it plays here in the background.
Wait, you don't think that him driving and being chased by another car that goes into a, what was it, a bulldozer?
Yeah. Yeah,
slices off the top of it, that's not the ultimate?
It's interesting. No, it is. That is a very good scene.
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting because Ben and I were talking about, like, what's the best car chase that you've seen in the last, that you can remember? Like, the best car chase scene. And we both were like, the Bourne Identity car chase.
It's like
chase
a classic scene. One.
Yeah, like, you watched that in theaters and you were like, holy crap, did that really just happen? And even the one in 2 and 3, there's a couple more that are all great
ones. I really like the Italian Job.
Oh, that's phenomenal
too.
It's got a really good car chase, definitely.
And this is another thing where this movie is kind of like that generic level. Like, the car chase scene isn't great.
No,
it's not bad. It's very forgettable.
Yeah, so this scene, I mean, really, I guess there's not that much to say about it other than the speech.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But if you, as we said, if you try to think about this movie and what are you going to remember it for and how are you going to relate this movie to somebody 10 years from now, mm-hmm. if you haven't seen it since or something, it's just going to be talking about this scene.
This scene and her getting pulled out from under the bed. I feel like that's something that you just, it's ingrained in everyone's memory as well.
So in the sense of like pure dramatic action, I would definitely argue this is a great scene. Like it's a great scene for the monologue and for her getting pulled. I would even say it starts a little before this. It's when she's on the phone and she sees them taking, because
she's like coming clean. She's a sweet girl. She's like, Dad, I have something to tell you.
They're here.
I didn't go see you too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Her cousins are in Spain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she, and you know, he's like, stay focused, baby. Like whatever he says, like he's
like, my favorite is like, the next part is very important.
Yeah. Exactly.
They're going to take you.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Jesus, really? Yeah. That's your answer as a dad?
Because he's a stone-cold badass.
Yeah,
and
he has
to lay it all on the table, you know?
Yeah.
So I definitely think, like, it was impossible for Taken 2 and 3 to have
this
moment. Well, it's just, if you take out the memorable quality of this moment, this movie becomes exactly what it looked like it was going to be, which mm-hmm. was, like, just another action movie. I mean, it should be noted that Liam Neeson's a phenomenal actor.
He mm-hmm. is incredible.
So
I mean, that's what we talk about in all these movies. That I'm going to always talk about the two.
Yeah.
Air Force One and The Rock.
Yeah.
You have these guys that give such Oscar-worthy performances as bad guys.
Yeah.
It doesn't always have to be that way. Bill Pullman in Independence Day.
That's great.
That bring this movie to another level.
Yeah. And he does. It's just, it's by sheer force of will. It's his performance is that good. So 2 and 3, what do you can't mimic it. So like you end up with, you know, I don't. Do you think we'll ever do Taken 2 or 3 on this show? Maybe.
You have a lot of other movies.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
a lot of movies to get through.
She makes a very valid point.
She makes a valid point. So, in honor of the phenomenal speech that he gives, I'm going to move us straight into favorite line.
Yep.
Because it would be very easy for us to all choose this monologue as the favorite line. I thought about it. I chose a different favorite line.
I know my favorite line, too.
All right, she's excited.
Yeah, she's excited.
What's Kathy's?
When Kim says, Dad, you don't have to worry. And he says, that's like telling water not to be wet, sweetie.
Yeah. It's perfect. Such a dad line. It's like
it's
the ultimate
line.
Dad jokes.
mine is, I once had a wife, my great love. Oh, wait, that's Batman
that's
Begins.
That's Batman Begins, man.
Look, I love that line. I was going to bring it in somehow. Okay, so other than what I said earlier about lack of payment on the bill.
That's a really good line.
That's probably my favorite. There's also the, now's not the time for dick measuring, Stuart.
Yeah, it's a great one.
That's great. And then the other one is, look, Jean-Claude, I'll burn the Eiffel Tower to the ground if I have to.
Yeah. Okay, so you guys, you look very well in the fine lines. The line that I went with is, it's actually not him, and it's, like, broken up.
Uh-huh.
But it's when he finds the rich, like, jerk-off guy who's who's running the club or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's chasing him into the elevator with the gun. So he starts to talk, and the first thing the guy says, he says, you have, like, what was he saying? You have no idea. And he just shoots him.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, in any of these movies, the villain's always like, you have no idea who you're dealing with. It doesn't even let him finish
the statement.
Yeah,
he doesn't care. He already mm-hmm. knows who he's dealing with.
The beauty of it is, though, because it's an action movie, you know exactly what he's going to say.
Yeah, it's perfect.
And that's what they're playing on.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, wait, we can tell. And he shoots him again. Like, I like that whole sequence so much.
You have to understand. It was all just
not
business.
It's not personal.
It's not personal.
It's personal to me.
Yeah.
And he shoots him like 6 times.
Bang,
it's
bang.
Great. Yeah. It's like, that's like, I just like that so much because it's like one of those, like, you know, it's like it's the people who understand the genre kind of winking at us.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
We can kind of next level you on this
writing.
And then
writing. He goes up in the elevator to the gala.
Oh, I love it. You're just dead.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. That's the thing about this movie is it has some of the best payoffs.
Yeah,
like the torture scene when he just leaves him there. This when he kills this guy immediately, doesn't even let him finish his sentence.
Yeah,
when he caps the what's he called? The harem or whatever he is. The prince.
Oh, the sheik?
On the ship. The sheik.
Yeah.
Right. He just shoots him in the head. He's like, wait, we can talk. Boom.
Just another brutal, brutal stereotype. So we're going to move into sort of the closing statements here, guys. Once again, if you want to join in on the discussion for favorite line or recast, that is one of our favorite things to have you guys do. So please comment and let us know who you would recast. Hero villain ranking all time. Do we think? Obviously, there's no villain.
I could put Liam in the top 50.
Yeah,
yeah.
We're gonna have to like put a board up pretty soon that actually has where we rank everyone.
So then you have to bump people off the board too.
Yeah, move them up and down. Yeah, that will happen soon, guys. We are working on that.
That'll be a thing that we're gonna do. I'm like Brian Mill. I mean, maybe
he's the 50. Ultimate overbearing dad. Right.
Yeah, maybe he's. I guess he's ultra iconic. It feels like it hasn't been long enough in memory to like really.
I mean, what, it's been 6 years since this came out? It's been seven or whatever, and they've already made three?
Maybe top 50. I probably don't even put him top 50.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's get into recast.
We're running short on time, so this is our favorite part.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll wrap it up. We're going to hit the recast real fast. So I'm going to let you guys start us off here.
After you.
After me? Okay, let's start with Famke.
Famke Janssen.
Yes.
Okay.
Annette Bening.
This is for the record, guys. We're recasting as if this movie were made in 1995.
Yes. So it's like...
Several years before
American Beauty. You saw her in American Beauty.
Right.
You know that she can be this evil bitch of a mom.
And, it's good.
And she's horrible. She throws Brian under the bus over and over and over in this movie. Under the bus?
Under the bus. I said
over and under. So Annette Bening.
Mine was kind of a two-parter, so it has to be both characters.
Okay.
But it was... This is really bad. Bruce Willis and Demi Moore, and then that's when they would talk
on set. Oh, they're together? Yeah.
But no, I actually really do like Bruce Willis for the role of Liam Neeson.
Mid-90s, it's solid. Yeah.
I can see both of them doing that.
That's Die Hard Part 3. I mean, that's like, that's a great age. Yeah. And Demi Moore, that's G.I. Jane Demi Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like it.
But then I also thought Harrison Ford would be great.
They mentioned that, too.
He's the go-to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so I went with Sharon Stone.
That's good.
Okay.
For Famke.
Yeah.
Like, that's a Casino era, but I was thinking, like, when she looks crazy and drugged out at the end and she looks older, mm-hmm. like, you go with, like, that, like, kind of, like, mm-hmm. beautiful but ugly Sharon Stone. I think you could, like, get away with that.
Yeah.
I also thought Julianne Moore would be good for it. But that's, I mean, it's kind of the same thing as Famke Janssen. Like, they parallel each other a little bit.
All right, so...
I did Mel.
Mel Gibson?
Mel Gibson.
Strong?
It's strong. I feel like that's the thing with these guys that are such massive, like Bruce Willis, Harrison Ford, Mel Gibson in the 90s, is it almost feels like a cop-out. Yeah. But if this movie came out in the 90s, I saw Ransom. Yeah. I saw Payback. I
want
to see Mel Gibson.
90s straight to video, I would say Mr. T.
That's fantastic. That's good.
I'd go Steven Seagal.
So I'll make this quick. My thought was basically that all the guys we're talking about, Mel Gibson, Bruce Willis, like, you run over all the movie stars. You're like, when this movie was made with Neeson, though, that wasn't, like, the role he was.
Right.
So you have to think about, like, who was a guy that in that year, that's why I said, like, it almost would be more hilarious if it was, like, Richard Gere.
Right.
Or, like, Dennis Quaid. I feel like that's
like Dennis Quaid.
Enough.
Okay. I think that'd be good.
But as they say, Dennis Quaid is a poor man's Kevin Costner, which is kind of exactly what you'd want for this movie.
Right.
You know, he's stoic, but ultimately what I went with was... I may have just gone with Harrison Ford in the end. But I think I like Quaid more.
Really? I think Quaid's better.
Or she just kept Liam Neeson, because he was
could have definitely done
age-ish.
So then Maggie Grace, I went with Dominique Swain, the daughter from Face Off.
Okay.
I think it's solid.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I went with Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah, okay. It's like Election. It's like a few years before Election.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, for the daughter, I didn't.
Yeah, even it's think, fair. Yeah. Recasting children is difficult. Yeah, it's always hard,
even though she's like 23. Like,
I don't even know who would be 17 at that.
I was a reach on Dominique Swain.
I almost went with Natalie Portman, but she's like 14 or 15.
Yeah. Like a Mila Kunis or something.
Yeah exactly.
But then they'd be
a little too young. We are going to run straight through Cage versus Cruise, as much as I would like to do Tom Cruise.
Either of them. The whole speech in their voice.
Why didn't we think about that?
God, we're so bad at our jobs.
I don't know who you are.
Got a very particular set of skills.
All right. Anyway, so let's talk categories. There are three action movie categories, guys. There is Totally Legitimate. That is going to be like The Fugitive or Die Hard, a movie that is a very sound movie outside of the action genre. There is Totally Ridiculous. That is Fall Off a Cliff of Absurdity. We're talking now most recently Independence Day and also
Face Off,
Con Air.
Yeah.
And then there's the middle category, which is Legitimately Ridiculous, which is that's kind of like the hybrid category, if you will. And we like to put, you know, Point Break or The Rock in that category. So which of those three categories does this movie fit into? What do you guys think?
legitimately ridiculous.
Middle category?
Yep.
Yeah?
Yeah, same. Ridiculous, legitimate.
Ridiculous, legitimate. Wait, yeah. Did I screw it up?
I don't know. One of us did. It doesn't matter.
I go
the
totally,
middle category.
I go totally ridiculous.
Totally ridiculous?
Okay. Totally ridiculous.
I understand that. I mean, yeah. He takes down the whole entire thing by himself.
Yeah.
He doesn't even ask any of his covert ops buddies to help mm-hmm. him.
It's awesome.
And then he's still able to leave the country with his daughter, no questions asked.
Oh, yeah,
asked.
No problem. He got his visa stamped.
He just killed, like, seven people.
He got a standard action. He got a standard action movie gunshot, like, gunshot wound. Like, that's, like, right. a standard. We don't ever talk about that.
Yeah, you got to get hit once.
Yeah, you take one bullet, like, in the arm or the leg, yeah. but you can just, like, power through it.
You're fine. You're
you
so
usually
angry.
Don't even flinch.
Yeah.
Yeah, your testosterone.
It's just a flesh wound.
Adrenaline. All right, so that wraps it up for us, guys, for Action Movie Anatomy, the Taken episode. Thank you so much for watching. I want to thank my lovely co-hosts one more time. Andrew Guy, where can the people find you?
At Andrew Guy on Twitter, and thank you so much, Kathy.
Thanks for having me. This is so much fun.
Yeah, you were great. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Katherine Kelly and on Instagram at Kathy Kelly.
Yeah, and you guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter or Instagram. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Doom. From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. Views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.